Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, my wife and two youngest daughters were gathered around the television the other night. We were watching Iowa, West Virginia. Women's basketball NCAA tournament. We watched USC play. It was nonstop. It was, you know, we were going from game to game. The girls are into it. They're very excited about the Portland Regional. And if you have tickets to go to Moda Center coming up this weekend or end of this week and through the weekend, you're going to have a real treat as you get to see USC and Juju Watkins and Cameron Brink and Stanford. And my nine-year-old is especially into the UConn-Duke game for some reason. She's just jazzed about seeing who wins that game. Here to talk more about it, USA Today national correspondent Lindsay Schnell, who is going to be all over the Portland Regional. How are you, Lindsay?
I'm well, John. How are you? I'm excited to hear your girls are as excited for the games as I am. I can't say Duke-UConn is like high on my list, but maybe I'm missing something.
Yes, the nine-year-old very much into seeing whether or not Duke can upset UConn. She said today, Dad, she was asking me about the seedings, how much the seedings matter. And I said, well, they matter to some extent, but sometimes you see a 7 seed that can beat a higher seeded team. And so she's got some hope. What are you excited about seeing in Portland and Albany? I'm bummed because the Albany region's got some star power to it, obviously, but what are you excited about seeing in Portland?
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at the Albany regional and get jealous, but if you really dig down on our regional, we have some incredible talent coming here. You mentioned Juju Watkins. You know, there's an argument to be made that Juju is the most pro-ready player right now in women's college basketball. What Paige Beckers did in UConn's first two games of the NCAA tournament after not playing in an NCAA tournament game for almost 2 years. You know, Gino Auriemma said, you know, she's the best player in America, which I think you can make a strong case for. So I'm excited to watch both of them, and I'm really excited at the prospect of them playing each other. If they both win their Sweet 16 game, they would match up in the Elite Eight. You mentioned Cameron Brink. You know, Brink and her postmate, Kiki Ariofen, are the best 1-2 punch in the paint in the country. And then we have Texas with Madison Booker, another phenomenal freshman. I really like Gonzaga's team. I've liked them all year. They're so veteran. They've played together forever. So I think that we're going to have some great games. The game I'm most excited for initially is Stanford-NC State. I think that Stanford was lucky to win their second-round game, and NC State looked really good against Tennessee. So that could be really, really fun.
Let's talk about Stanford a little bit. Cameron Brink, obviously a local tie there. Stanford, the Pac-12 regular season champion. I felt in watching them in the conference tournament and maybe through the NCAA early rounds, that they're a little off, like maybe not playing their best basketball. What do you see happening with Stanford and Tara Vanderveer's team right now?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing is their strength is in the paint, but their guard play can be really inconsistent, specifically if they're not hitting shots. And we're at the point in the season where everyone can figure out a way to make life hard for you. So I think that that is what we have seen play out. So far, when they played Iowa State the other day, you know, Iowa State did hit shots. They matched them. It was an incredible game when it comes to execution. But the advantage that Tara has over pretty much everyone is that she's an excellent tactician, and Stanford has a huge playbook. It's really hard to prep for them, especially on such a short turnaround time. You know, in the Pac-12, when you see them lose, I don't ever think it's shocking because those teams know each other so well. But it's different when you have to prep for someone on like 3 days' notice and you're trying to catch up on all their film. So I think that it'll be a great game. I did pick NC State to upset them. And the big thing for Stanford is also like what happens if Cameron Brink gets in foul trouble. She's so good defensively, but that's not helpful. She's sitting on the bench.
We're talking to Lindsay Schnell, USA Today It'll be NC State and Stanford on Friday, 4:30 in the early game at Moda Center. The late game at 7 o'clock, Gonzaga and Texas. Texas is the one seed in that bracket. Stanford on the bottom of that is the two seed in that bracket. You think NC State is going to beat Stanford? What happens in Texas-Gonzaga?
Well, I mean, I'm a Pacific Northwest homer, so I picked Gonzaga. I've believed in them all season. They've beat Stanford already. Texas is really, really tough inside. They have a Taylor Jones, who played her first couple years at Oregon State. But, you know, Texas is missing their All-American point guard. They lost her for the season in December, Rory Harmon. And I just keep waiting for that to catch up with them. And I have to believe that at some point it's going to. On the other side, you have Gonzaga, who has three seniors that have played together for 4 or 5 years. It's hard to keep track. People have been in college a long time because
right.
of COVID.
Yeah.
But that is a huge advantage for them.
You know, on the men's side, there's been a lot of talk about one and dones and young players versus old players. Women's college basketball, because there hasn't been a line of one and done players, you get more depth, you get more experience. And you're right, with the pandemic, you have some 5 and 6 year seniors that will be playing. Is there an advantage to any of these teams in Portland in your mind? That are they older, wiser, deeper because of that?
Yeah, I would say that Gonzaga is in that realm. I mean, Stanford just always has experience. I'm trying to think too. Also, UConn, you know, it's tough. Like, they're on both sides of the same coin because they have a lot of experience, but they also have a very short rotation because they have had major injuries. I would say that probably USC is the most experienced and advantage in that realm because they have 3 Ivy League transfers who are playing their 5th year. And that's huge, you know, when you have that type of experience, those kids just don't really get rattled. They've usually seen and been in a lot of situations, so it's a little harder to shock them. So I would say that that probably is the team with the edge there. But the other thing that's hard, you know, is the transfer portal has made it so that kids are moving and playing right away. And so that can, you can look at it from like whatever side you want. Some people would say it's an advantage. Others would say it's a disadvantage. But I think that USC with their 3 Ivy League transfers, that's notable for sure.
The other Portland regional bracket has USC. You mentioned Juju Watkins, who is fantastic. USC playing Baylor, and that game will be on Saturday. That will be the 2:30 game at Moda Center, and then at 5 o'clock, it'll be UConn-Duke, the game my 9-year-old, for some reason, is into. I think because she picked Duke to go deep in her bracket, but who knows. Give me an idea. Outside of Juju Watkins, what are you looking for in those 2 games?
Well, I think that Rhea Marshall from USC is the most underrated big in the country. She is unbelievably athletic. And then, of course, you've got Mackenzie Forbes, who does nothing for them but hit big shots. Baylor is sort of not a surprise. That's probably not the right way to say it, but they're just a little under the radar. They have a really balanced scoring attack. They're led by Nikki Collin, who has had a long history as a WNBA coach before coming back to college. I was really impressed with Baylor's execution in the late game against Virginia Tech. So I think that's always fascinating to watch, like who knows how to execute out of a timeout and who doesn't. And then with UConn and Duke, Reagan Richardson from Duke had a spectacular first 2 games. She scored, I think it was 53 combined points, and she averages like 6 a game. So can she continue that tear? Your daughter is hoping so. And then, of course, at UConn, you have Paige Beckers, and then you have Aaliyah Edwards, who is going to come out this year and be a top 5 pick in the WNBA draft. I really like watching her play in the paint. So I think, you know, we got a lot of star power in women's basketball across the board. And again, I know it's easy to be sad that Caitlin Clark isn't here, but we got some really good players in this regional.
I'm excited to see it up close. I couldn't help but, you know, I was watching Caitlin Clark in that Iowa-West Virginia game the other night, and I couldn't help but think about the fact that West Virginia, in a lot of ways, outplayed Iowa, found a way to lose, mostly at the free throw line. 22 22-point advantage at the free throw line for Iowa. Lindsay, what happened there? Are we getting some NBA officiating for Caitlin Clark, or is that just that's just style of play that Iowa plays? They get to the line.
I think Caitlin Clark could teach Mike Krzyzewski something about working the officials. And that was why when that game was close at halftime, I was telling people, calm down. There's plenty of time for her to get a lot of calls. Look, she does know how to work officials. There's no question. But she does also drive to the basket a lot and create that contact and force official to make a decision about if they're going to put her at the line or not. She definitely knows, and I think that also Caitlin's basketball IQ is so high that she understands that she's not hitting from the outside, like, okay, I got to get to the line, I got to get my stroke back. So all those factors, you know, played a role. It's also hard to win on the road. You know, we play the first two rounds on home sites. Kenny Brooks at Virginia Tech said, you know, that's probably worth like 8 to 10 points for the home team. And I think you saw that in Iowa, West Virginia. I do think the officiating is also pretty bad, but I don't think that was just in that game. In women's college basketball in general, we need to get better.
Give me an idea. 5 Pac-12 teams in the Sweet 16. I had said I thought they could get 4, Colorado being the 5th. They got in as well. What does it say about the Pac-12 and women's basketball?
I mean, this is the best conference in the country, and I've been saying that all season. The ACC also sent quite a few teams, but they were like in more of like the 5, 6, 7 range. Whereas now, although obviously Oregon State's going to play Notre Dame on Friday, but I think that the Pac-12 is so good and not top heavy, but I mean just tough in their top teams. And I'll tell you what, like Iowa is going to have its hands full with Colorado, especially going back to the officiating. A lot of that game will come down to how it's called. Colorado is so physical, and they play so hard, and that can really shock you if you're not used to it. And if the officials let them be physical, that's going to give them a huge advantage.
Yeah, and I look at the particularly the front court players at Colorado, that a lot of size and a lot of toughness and rebounding. I think it'll be a great game, that Iowa-Colorado game. That'll be on ABC. Big numbers there. We have to talk about Oregon State, Notre Dame, Oregon State. That has been a nemesis for Scott Ruick's program. Is this the year they get by Notre Dame, or how do you see that game boiling down?
I don't know that I would call them a nemesis. I mean, I haven't played them in quite a while. I think that they're going to win. Notre Dame lost their starting forward, Kylie Watson, who used to play at Oregon in the ACC tournament. Unfortunately, she tore her ACL. So I just don't think they have anyone that can stop Reagan Beers inside. Now, Notre Dame's probably going to play a zone, and that's going to be an advantage for Oregon State, I think, because what Dame does when they play their zone is it's not lazy, right? It's very aggressive. Hannah Hidalgo, their rock star freshman, she creates a lot of havoc. She steals the ball a lot. But Oregon State, when it plays a zone, plays a similar zone. So they're not going to be thrown off. They're going to have a zone offense. And if they can hit some early shots, that's the ball game right there, I think. So I expect them to win. You know, I also think that they don't have pressure on them. They're the only ones who expect them. And that's huge.
Now, coming into that game, it'll be Oregon State as a 3 seed against Notre Dame, a 2 seed. Oregon State has never beat Notre Dame. Is this the year? If they do beat them, they are probably getting South Carolina. I have South Carolina winning my whole bracket. Not that I'm an expert here on women's college basketball, but they are the team I think you have to get by, obviously, in that bracket to get to the championship, Final Four. How big of a task is beating Notre Dame and beating South Carolina in a weekend?
I mean, it's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure, especially when... John, I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, like back-to-back games. I'm focused one game at a time here. Look, South Carolina is really, really good. They're really deep. They're really athletic. They are on a mission after getting upset last year. But I think that's part of why I think that they're beatable, is because last year I was so convinced that they were going to beat Iowa and just roll to the national championship. And it was probably like 5 minutes after the semifinal when I was like, so they're not winning the title, are they? Because I was just in shock. So I am like hesitant because of that to pick them and say they're a sure thing. And, you know, to me, in the NCAA tournament, I feel this way when I fill out men's brackets too. I always pick, you know, if there's a great matchup, like who is a better coach? Who's a better strategist? And in the women's game, Scott is a great strategist. I mean, he would be great at it if he were a men's coach. Like, his kids are always prepared. Michaela Pivick and I were talking at the Pac-12 tournament when Oregon State, you know, went into that double overtime game against Colorado, right? Colorado scored early in the first overtime to, like, force the second one. And Mick said, hey, he's got a plan. He had a plan when they broke the huddle, what they're going to run if Colorado scores a layup, a three, or hits a free throw. She was like, I always felt confident in the huddle with him. So I think that gives them a huge advantage. They've won late games. Like, that's really big. When you trust, like, we're going to get a good look out of this, that's huge. And I think that with South Carolina, again, no pressure. There's zero pressure on Oregon State. They were picked to finish 10th. No one thought they could win. You know, here we are. So I think they can just play free. And if you hit shots early, that puts pressure on the other team. You cannot beat anyone at this point in the NCAA tournament with a going, you know, 16 and a half minutes scoring like 7 points or whatever it was against Nebraska. It's brutal.
Kim Mulkey, LSU coach. You know, I've always thought of her as, you know, you can't stop watching her, but also outlandish, outspoken. She's her own person. I think she's very polarizing. Washington Post working on a story, maybe. And Kim Mulkey coming out, getting in front of this. I'm going to play this for listeners who haven't heard it.
But you see, reporters who give a megaphone to a one-sided, embellished version of things aren't trying to tell the truth. They're trying to sell newspapers and feed the click machine. This is exactly why people don't trust journalists and the media anymore. It's these kinds of sleazy tactics and hatchet jobs that people are just tired of. I'm fed up, and I'm not going to let the Washington Post attack this university, this awesome team of young women I have, or me without a fight. I've hired the best defamation law firm in the country, and I will sue the Washington Post if they publish a false story about me. Not many people are in a position to hold these kind of journalists accountable, but I am, and I'll do it.
What do you make of Kim Mulkey versus the Washington Post?
I mean, it's really hard to answer this question because none of us have seen the story.
Right.
But I think that Kim Mulkey is a master motivator, and I think she's very strategic. And personally, I find it hard to believe that anyone could write anything that's super revealing that is like shocking. Like, don't we, like pretty much everyone thinks Kim Mulkey is crazy, and she has been for a long time. So, I very much believe that LSU knew what they were getting when they hired her. Someone who is passionate and fiery and knows how to win. I mean, she's got 4 national championships, 5 if you include the one she won as a player. She told me when I was at LSU, you know, I know that I can, you know, some of the stuff I get is because I have skins on the wall. And I briefly was like, does she actually mean the skins of her enemy? Like, anything seems possible. and then I was like, wait, she's it's a metaphor. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that we're all just like waiting. When is the story going to publish? And in the meantime, what I know for sure is that the memes on Twitter have been incredible, and I want more of them.
Do you think, because, you know, she definitely is taking a strategy here, she's getting out in front of this, was it wise for her to do that, or is there a, a little bit of, is she drawing attention to the, more attention to the story?
I think it's, again, really hard to know until we read the story. I mean, one thing that I wondered was, because she said that they sent her a list of fact-checking questions, which you and I know is pretty common in journalism when you're about to run, like, a bigger story. And maybe she gave that statement because they were concerned that the Washington Post might show up in a press conference and try to ask something. Maybe they were trying to get ahead of it because of that. Maybe it was a motivational tactic. You know, her team hadn't played very well the day before, and she is a master motivator. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that a well-done story is going to generate a lot of clicks, to her point, and sell a lot of papers, whether or not you know it's coming. So if it's good, people are going to read it, I think.
I'll read you all the time, Lindsay Schnell, USA Today. Thank you for giving us your time. I'll see you at Moda Center for the Women's Regional here in Portland.
Sounds good. What a great segue. I think that if Duke wins, you should bring your 9-year-old to the press conference to ask a question.
Oh, no. She's not going to do that. I'm not going to be that guy. But, she would gladly do it. Trust me. She was nosing around the studio before the show asking me what I was going to talk about. So we'll see. Thank you, Lindsay.
Bye.
All right. There she goes. Yeah, it's true. By the way, in my own poll, in my own contest, NCAA men's and women's contest, Anna and the girls were sitting in like 29th place out of several hundred entries. I think it was like 350 entries.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.